This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Wednesday, October 30th. Today we have an opportunity to talk with one of the members of the House Intelligence Committee who has been in the room for the witness testimony in the impeachment hearings, including yesterday's revelations from a top White House official who was on that July 25th phone call between President Trump and Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, the top Ukraine expert on the National Security Council, appointed just last year by the Trump administration, described his concerns and what he did about them after several incidents in July. Reportedly, he even tried to edit the phone call transcript notes for accuracy before they got finalized, but some of the language relevant to Joe Biden got omitted anyway after his edits. Let's find out more about that and also preview tomorrow's pivotal vote scheduled for the full House of Representatives on rules for going forward with the public hearings that will soon take place. My guest is Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, who represents New York's 18th Congressional District in the Hudson Valley north of New York City. Congressman, thanks so much for some time today. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
Let's talk about what happened yesterday and then take a step back and look at the big picture. Could you describe what Colonel Vindman told you about his attempts to edit the transcript notes for accuracy, including what wound up missing from them anyway?
Well, Brian, I can't describe the specific testimony because the House rules prohibit it. But what I can tell you, first of all, is that everyone needs to realize that Colonel Vindman is a decorated Army colonel. This is a guy who was injured in an IED attack in Iraq, earned the Purple Heart. He spent his entire adult life serving our country, and he is acting out of a strong moral sense of right and wrong. But what I think is important to realize is that this is a person with direct knowledge, a direct witness who was on the call, and whose job included reviewing the call memorandum and making edits to it. So it's a very important witness for us. But I also don't want to lose the forest for the trees on the call memo itself. The call memo is a devastating piece of evidence for the president. It contains the four corners of his wrongdoing, and he needs to be held accountable for it. I don't know how many layers of gloss need to be put on it for us to understand exactly the abuse of power that it clearly documents.
After the July 10th meeting with Trump officials and Ukrainian officials, and after the July 25th phone call between Trump and Zelensky, according to Colonel Vindman's published opening remarks, he says he contacted the National Security Council's chief lawyer, John Eisenberg, to express his concerns. And also after the July 10th meeting, Vindman's boss, Fiona Hill, who was Trump's top Russia and European affairs advisor, did so as well, alerted the NSC's top lawyer with her concerns. Is it clear to you what Colonel Vindman and Dr. Hill were hoping Attorney Eisenberg would do with that information, or what he actually did with it?
What I can tell you is that these are career professionals who have dedicated their life to serving the country and who are going by the book. When you see something in one of these positions and you think it's wrong or potentially illegal, then your duty is to report it. And so I think what you've seen, Colonel Vindman, Ambassador Hill, people like Ambassador Yovanovitch, people like Ambassador Taylor, what you've seen them all do is appropriately apply their set of morals and ethics and duty to the actions they were witnessing, and they did something about it. They either responded to a lawful subpoena and came in and gave their evidence to us, they reported it to someone else at work, they documented it contemporaneously and took copious notes, they made pleas to their superiors in some cases to try to get some attention brought to this, a set of conduct that they clearly knew was at odds with American national security, with the security of Ukraine, that was about domestic politics. The red flags were all over the place, and thank God we've got people like Colonel Vindman, who still know right from wrong, and who have the courage to do something about it.
Well, what would be the significance to you of those omissions from the transcript if someone edited them out after Colonel Vindman did his job and went through it for editing for accuracy? The transcript version that Trump released still does have him asking for an investigation of Biden by name and of the 2016 election. So how would these omissions change anything if they were in there?
I don't believe you need more to understand. Let me put it this way. The call memorandum that has already been released has everything you need to know, it seems to me, about what the president was doing. In other words, do we know what the president was up to? Is it clear? The whistleblower complaint made a bunch of detailed allegations and statements. They've all been corroborated, first and very importantly by this call memorandum, but in addition by the president's own words, by his chief of staff's confession of a quid pro quo, by the documents and text messages and subsequent evidence that has already been made public, and a bunch more is going to be shown to the public soon. And I really can't wait until all this comes into the public arena so everyone can see it for themselves. That's coming fast. And so the central set of events is not seriously in dispute, which is why the Republicans are left arguing about process points, which don't make any sense and are quickly being mooted anyway, or they are left engaging in these outrageous attacks on the character of good people, whether it's Chairman Schiff, who's a good man doing a good job, or whether it's Colonel Vindman, who earned the Purple Heart in Iraq and is being accused of being a spy on Fox News.
So much has been corroborated, just as you say. One thing that apparently is in dispute is that Ambassador Gordon Sondland, who was part of the Trump and Giuliani team pressuring Ukraine for this political favor, Gordon Sondland testified that only the White House meeting that Zelensky wanted was conditioned on his announcing these investigations. Ambassador Taylor testified that the military aid also was dependent on that as well. And that might be really important because in a Senate trial, if it comes to that, Republicans might say withholding a meeting for a political favor is bad but not impeachable, while withholding life or death military aid is much more serious and abuse of power. How good is your evidence so far that it was both?
I think it will be clear and convincing. And I got to tell you, I think Ambassador Sondland has some tough questions to answer, and he should be looking in the mirror and trying to understand, you know, what his responsibilities are. You know, this is a dilettante turned diplomat who was way over his head, who is up to his neck in this thing. And what I can tell you is that I put a lot more stock in the testimony of career military officers like Colonel Vindman than I do in some rich real estate developer who bought his way into a diplomatic position and is not coming clean with everything he knows and what he did. And let me just leave it right there. I do think the evidence will show that there was a quid pro quo for both U.S. military assistance and other aid, in addition to White House meetings and other official benefits, in exchange for launching these investigations, both of the conspiracy theory around the 2016 election that the Republicans are obsessed with, but also the Bidens and Burisma, so that they could get an advantage in the 2020 election. It's as bad as you think.
Tomorrow, the House is scheduled to vote on rules for the next phase of the inquiry. I don't have to tell you. That will be public hearings led by your committee, the Intelligence Committee, chaired by Adam Schiff. What should the American people expect to take place and when in public?
Well, I think what the American public should expect is that there should be a full public airing of all the evidence, and it should be done under a process that's fair, where there's an opportunity for the president's defenders to question these witnesses and to grill them on whether they're telling the truth. And that should all happen right out in the public so that the public can read this testimony for itself. By the way, all these deposition transcripts that have been taken over the last few weeks will all be released. Mm. The public will be able to read all that unredacted evidence, you know, I guess unless there's something personal identifier information or something classified for some reason, but basically all of it will be released. And the public can see it for itself. And here's the bottom line. We're not afraid of the facts. Those of us doing this inquiry want to have the facts revealed. That's it. We can handle it, whatever it is. I think it is clear from the evidence that has been released in the public space alone, without commenting on any of this stuff in private, that the president has engaged in an abuse of his office, that everybody down at that White House is either trying to cover it up or clean it up, and that it demands accountability. And what the public should expect is that when somebody like me says that, they can look at it for themselves, listen to these witnesses, and make their own judgment.
Then, after your public hearings, the Judiciary Committee will take it and decide on actual articles of impeachment, if any. And I understand the president will be able to have an attorney present at that time to question or cross-examine witnesses, but that right is conditional. The resolution says if the president, quote, refuses to cooperate unlawfully with congressional requests, then, quote, the chair shall have the discretion to impose appropriate remedies, including by denying specific requests by the president or his counsel, unquote. So can you explain that clause or say
Sure.
why the president, who's the defendant here, in effect, shouldn't have a right to legal counsel no matter what?
Well, sure. I mean, there's what I think that resolution is pointing to is that you've had unprecedented obstruction and stonewalling by this administration. And it's only because of the courage of guys like Colonel Vindman and Ambassador Yovanovitch and others that stonewall has crumbled in meaningful ways. But there are still document requests that have not been responded to. You know, a lot of these witnesses took notes. There's contemporaneous documentation of everything they're saying, but those belong to the State Department or the White House, and those are being withheld improperly. So what that's saying is if you want to participate in this process, participate in this process. You can't go to trial, ignore all this discovery rules, violate your legal ethics, refuse to cooperate with the judge's lawful instructions, and then demand all your rights in the courtroom. That's not how it works. So I think what that resolution is trying to acknowledge is that you've got a president who has been acting at odds with his responsibilities in the law, withholding lawfully subpoenaed materials, and if he wants to participate as in his own defense through his attorneys and others, then they have some responsibility to also produce documents and evidence that has been subpoenaed or get a court order saying there's some privilege shielding it, which they have not done.
But you don't want to wait through months of court procedures to resolve questions of legitimacy of subpoenas on particular documents and things like that. So should we expect some crazy, contentious, televised show where Republicans or the White House are refusing to withhold documents that they say are executive privilege, and you're saying, oh, yeah, well, then your lawyer can't cross-examine Colonel Vindman or something like that?
I think the chairman is going to make that decision in the appropriate way. And knowing Chairman Schiff, he's going to bend over backwards to be fair to the president, and that's good, but we're not going to get pushed around either. And in this case, where independent of the White House efforts to stonewall and conceal evidence, we have heroic Americans coming forward giving testimony. We've got a bunch of other sources of information, and many of us believe that we will be able to put the facts of what happened before the American public one way or the other. And therefore, it seems to me you have the option of either demanding that the White House produce more material or choosing instead to move expeditiously and say, we've proved clearly what happened here and we can make a judgment about it. And by the way, to the extent that we need to draw an inference, it's going to be in the negative because these guys are obstructing. That's the approach, I think, that makes them pay a price for stonewalling while also gives them fair process.
We're going to run out of time soon. You represent a district that reelected you as a Democrat in 2016 and then in 2018, but also went for Trump by 2 points, if I have my data right. How hard a sell is this for you and other members like you in mixed party districts where many people might either consider this a witch hunt that you're out to get Trump by any means necessary, impeachment looking for a crime, or they would just rather you be focusing on health care and other things about their lives?
I think almost every American I meet would rather we be focusing on health care and other things that affect their lives. I would rather be focusing on lowering prescription drug costs and building good roads and bridges and getting your subways fixed and making sure people have clean drinking water and can afford a place to live in New York City and elsewhere. I mean, those are the issues I went to Congress to work on. But this is a responsibility that comes with a job. And it's my job as an elected official not just to put my finger in the wind and see which way it's blowing, but to lead when necessary, even if there's a political cost in doing so. So what I believe is that if we run a process that's fair and we follow the facts and the evidence, then the people I represent will understand why I'm doing what I'm doing. Yes, they voted for the president. Yes, that should give me some humility when I go to them and say I know better. But when I'm in the possession of facts and evidence that show that he has abused his office, that he was putting his shady, seedy political interests and Rudy Giuliani's financial interests ahead of the country's interests, then I'm going to speak up.
Final thing, Congressman, and maybe this is jumping too far ahead, but the Judiciary Committee could recommend impeachment, but another option is to recommend that the president be censured. That is officially criticized by Congress, what the House rules call stronger than a simple rebuke, but not as strong as an expulsion. And it has happened a few times in American history. Andrew Jackson was censured for withholding documents, sounds familiar. And President James Buchanan was reprimanded, something like censure, in 1860 for awarding contracts based on party relations. Doesn't that also sound very familiar?
Right.
Could that, in your opinion, be a sufficient and less polarizing remedy for what he's apparently done here?
You know, this may sound surprising to some of my liberal friends, but it breaks my heart that the president would engage in this conduct, that he would sully himself and the office, that he would trade away the security of a country that's lost 13,000 people to Russian aggression and is hanging by a thread and dependent on our aid. He's threatening the whole security of the transatlantic alliance and of Europe. And the fact is that I think we need to hold him accountable for that. And unless the facts get better for the president, I don't think a simple censure would be enough. But I'm happy to reserve judgment on that until we have a full airing of this and we know all the facts. But where I am right now is that wouldn't do it for me.
Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, member of the House Intelligence Committee, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Questions, thoughts, feelings, ideas, and anything else you want to share with us about what you're watching for in the impeachment inquiry. Give us a call and leave us a voicemail, and you might get to hear your voice on the podcast. The number is 844-745-TALK. Just leave us a message. Again, it's 844-745-8255. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon at WNYC.org.